It's Tuesday, the 7th of June, 2016. Happy birthday to Jordan Clarkson. The show brought to you by Fantrax and Chief Gooden One. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like Chief Gooden One, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can become a sponsor of the show. Real straightforward, and thank you to Chief Gooden One. Of course, big thanks go out to Fantrax, who is the sponsor of the podcast moving forward, and they are the best site that you can host your fantasy league on. Forget about these other big name brands that you might have heard of or you go to by default. Fantrax is the place to go. Not only do they cover 9 major sports, the leagues are open all year round. You don't have these off seasons of, okay, ESPN Fantasy Basketball, nah, it's not open until the first week of October. You can draft at any time on Fantrax. There is the most customization available for any free league out there. You can do so many manner of things, any type of leagues, auctions, slow drafts. So none of this drafting via Google Docs or Google spreadsheets. That's a thing of the past on Fantrax. You draft online draft software, you set the timer. Instead of a 30-second draft window, you can have 12 hours as the time limit. You do slow drafts online. It is perfect. It's perfected by the system. And then you've got the premium commissioner models, where you pay a small fee for the leagues where you heavily invest in, and you can have all manner of options. I do suggest you check it all out, because Fantrax is going to be the place where we host all of the Red Rock Listener Leagues this season, and you're going to really want to move your regular league over to Fantrax, because the opportunities and the options that you have for your league are almost limitless. Fantrax. Yeah. All right, we're going to do another of the season in review shows. And today's one, actually one more thing on Fantrax. There is a forum over on Fantrax, which we're really starting to get kickstarted this season. I've got my own sub-forum over there, the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball sub-forum, which is a great place to ask extended questions. So if you've got any sort of basketball or fantasy-related questions, head across to the Fantrax forums, search out the basketball section. You can find my sub-forum there. Ask questions there. That it's a great way to interact with other users as well. And we're really trying to build up that forum section over on Fantrax as well. All right, this is a Season in Review podcast, so we are going to talk about, in today's show, the Portland Trailblazers. So,
let's get to it.
Quick note on the Red Rock 30-team Dynasty League. Lots of emails have been sent out. I think I currently have 5 spots remaining, so I know a few of you are waiting anxiously to see whether you get one of these spots, and it is a real tough decision. I've got about 50 emails for these 5 spots at the moment, so making this decision is extremely hard, and I don't like having people miss out, but people are going to miss out, unfortunately. As I said, I will be doing another 30-team dynasty in the next month, maybe. I don't know when we'll get that started, but pretty soon, which includes real salaries. We'll do another dynasty league at some point, plus all the redraft leagues as well. And if demand is high enough, I might even have to run a 4th dynasty. Actually, that would be a 5th dynasty, but we'll see how everything goes. Everything's rounding out beautifully for the 30-team league. If you are tweeting about the 30-team league, use the hashtag RR30, that's Red Rock 30 for the hashtag. If you are going to tweet about it, for the people who have received an email to say that they're in, your email regarding an invite to the league will be coming soon. Don't fret. We're working on something with Fantrax at the moment, so the people that sign up by listening to this podcast have got promo codes for special opportunities to win free gifts and stuff. So you're going to get some information coming soon with invitations to the league and invitations to sign up to Fantrax. When all that's sorted, I will let you guys know if we can get that across the line. But for now, just if you've got an email saying you're in, and you will get an invite to the league, and then we'll go through the first stage of picking a draft slot for those 30 teams who have a spot in the league. The Portland Trailblazers, the biggest surprise in the NBA. A lot of people predicted them for a very poor finish. I actually bet them in the over in the over-under for the season. Didn't expect them to finish with a 44-38 record. I'll be fair in saying that, but I did think that they'd get, I think their over-under was like, it was something ridiculously low, like 22 or 23 wins. It was really, maybe it was 25. It was really low. They absolutely smashed it. They played extraordinarily well after losing 4 out of their 5 starters. We saw big breakthroughs from guys like CJ McCollum. We saw Mason Plumlee. We saw Al-Farouq Aminu in extended roles or new roles on new teams. Really starting to lead with this team, along with Dame Lillard, obviously, and a real success. But this sort of success that they had, is it something that is beneficial for them moving forward? Yes, they didn't bottom out. Yes, they didn't tank, but they also lost their first round draft choice this year. The team is not quite as young as you might think they are. You look at them and go, they're an up and coming young team, which is true because you haven't seen a lot of these players in key roles before. But Dame Lillard's not young. He's not 22 years old. And this is, I'm not disparaging anyone or disparaging the season they had, but they're a team that really could have used a little bit of extra help because they're not a team who is, yes, they're on the rise, but how much longer are they going to be on the rise for? Lillard's 25 years old, like McCollum's 24, so they've still got a few years to go, definitely, but they're not 22. They're not a team that overachieved with a bunch of 22 or 21 year olds on rookie deals. That was, actually McCollum's still on a rookie deal, but I don't know if you're getting what I'm trying to say. I hope you are because you can't respond to me. But I'm just trying to say that I think that they're in a situation where if they are going to contend, it's not going to be 5 years down the track. It's going to be 2 years down the track. And they've got to start to really look at that. So they got into the playoffs. They were fortuitous to get through the first round with the injuries to the Clippers. They were getting their absolute asses kicked in those first two games before Blake and Chris Paul went down. And then they got through, played well against the Warriors, no doubt. Made a little bit easier by some Steph absences, but he came back and they got through there in the end. So if they took a step back next season, I wouldn't be surprised. And again, they took a huge step forward and they were a big surprise team, and it was fantastic, to be honest. But yeah, how much better can they be with their current team? They've got a lot of big interesting situation in terms of the offseason. I'll get to that in a sec. In terms of draft picks, well, that's easy because they don't have any. So no first rounder, no second round pick. In terms of the offseason, Gerald Henderson is an unrestricted free agent who came across in the Nick Batum trade. You've got Chris Kaman, who's an unrestricted free agent. He likely won't be back. You've got Brian Roberts, who's an unrestricted free agent who came over in a trade mid-season. He probably won't be back. But the restricted free agency is a real interesting situation for them. Alan Crabb, Myers Leonard, and Mo Harkless are all restricted free agents, and all of them played pretty key roles. Crabb and Harkless, especially down the stretch. Leonard, early on, he did struggle, suffered some shoulder injuries, which did cost him his starting job, cost him some playing time, and cost him some of his form, but he's still a guy that at 24 years of age was coming into this season with high hopes and with a pretty decent role on this team. But whether he gets retained or not, they've got some decisions to make. They might be active in free agency, and I think they should be, because as I mentioned, I think that their window is coming up in the next 2 to 3 years to really be competitive, because there's no players on this team who are really younger than Lillard and McCollum who are driving things, unless you believe in Noah Vonleh, which I don't really. But you know, we're talking about when Dame and CJ hit 27, that's when they need to be started to contend, 27 to 29, so in the next 3 years. So they need to sort of get free agents on board, because the young players coming through aren't really at that level. It's a weird situation for this team to be in. But again, I don't think that many Blazers fans would be complaining about the season they had. They'd be pretty thrilled with the sort of performances that they put up during the season. Let's talk about these players now in a bit of extra detail. We'll start, of course, with Dame Lillard, who quite famously was left off the All-Star team, found himself on the All-NBA ballot, and was subject to the Rose Rule provision in his contract. So he gets a bump, I think, of it's 12.5% in his contract because he made the All-NBA team this season. He was great again, but probably didn't live up quite to the hype that people had for him heading into the season. A lot of people were looking at him as an end-of-the-first-round sort of player. I wasn't quite that high on him. He ended the year as the 21st-ranked player in 9-cat leagues, 18th in 8-cat leagues. and some of that's to do with the way that he did tail off down the stretch in terms of just really couldn't shoot. It really had big struggle shooting. That was a big concern with him coming in, with so many players gone, with the focus being on Lillard so much. How is his shooting going to deal? Like, he's not a good assist guy. He's not a great guy with steals. He hits a lot of threes, yes, but the field goal percentage was going to be a concern. If you look at the punting value at an 8-2, he was 14, so he was at the end of that first round range there, so that's probably a little bit better. And he was a guy that you really did have to consider in a punt field goal percentage build. He had a Z score in that category of -1.6, which is not an out and out punt, but you have to really consider it and you have to deal with it pretty specifically to try and overcome that. And that's where he sits better. In a roto league, I wouldn't have touched him probably in the first two rounds personally. Maybe I would have been wrong in that assessment, but he's not someone that with some of the with his issues and that issue with the field goal percentage, in that definitely wouldn't have touched him in the first round in a rotisserie league. We look what he did. He averaged 25 points a game, which is obviously tremendous, and 3.1 triples, 4 rebounds, 6.8 assists, 0.9 steals, and that's a bit of a detriment to his game. 42 from the field on 20 shots, 89 from the line, and 38 from three. So all in all, maybe I'm being a little bit harsh on Lillard, but definitely wasn't a guy that lived up to end of the first round sort of ranking, but a comfortable second round player for the season. Can he get better? That's the question that I think we need to look at and ask. Can he be a better guy next season? Well, he can, because he can shoot better than 41%. And as players like Al-Farouq Aminu become more comfortable with their shot, as CJ McCollum gets a little bit more respect around the league, Dame can take himself back up to being a 43% shooter, which he was last season. And he goes from 41 to 43, then maybe that adds another point onto his game, 26 points a game, you know, 3 triples, 4 rebounds, get himself up to 7 assists by Aminu developing more respect or more trust in his own game, by maybe bringing someone else in free agency, a center who can connect on lobs. Maybe he gets those extra assists. The steals, I'm not sure, will ever really be a big factor for Lillard. He's just not that sort of player, and he is quite a negative defensively. If you look at the win shares, he was the clear best player on this team in terms of win shares. He finished second on the team in win shares per 48, clearly led the team in offensive box score plus minus at a 5.9, and the total was 3.7, but negative 2.2 defensively, which was one of the worst marks on the team. Doesn't produce much defensively at all, and he is a concern. And it is a concern putting him and CJ together. Now, McCollum had a negative 2 box score plus minus, so both below average defenders, both really good offensive players, but the defense combination of those two guys did cause a few problems during the season, and they do need to be paired with a defensive guard, which they might be looking for in free agency. So we'll see how that all works out for them. But Lillard is going to be pretty much locked into that top 15 role next season. Again, I don't think I'm taking him in the first round. I don't think I would take him in the first round, but in the top 15, top 20 is absolutely fine. I just don't think he's going to last past pick 10 in most situations. Maybe people will sour a little bit on him because of that drop in field goal percentage, but 25 and 7 with 3 triples are still pretty bloody good numbers, so it's not a terrible decision to grab him inside the top 15. CJ McCollum. Huge season for McCollum, and I'll admit he was a guy that I did get wrong. I thought, when I looked at him in the playoffs last season, I went, yep, he's going to be set for a pretty decent season. Then everyone left, and he was going to be put into a big role. And we knew that, but we looked at his per 36 numbers, and they weren't impressive. He couldn't hit free throws, he couldn't shoot, he couldn't get assists, he couldn't defend. I was like, where is all this going to come from? Now, in fairness to him, he was absolutely brilliant. The best place to look at it is he got 20 more minutes a game. Granted, that's a huge increase. But to get 20 more minutes a game and then increase your per 36 numbers and increase your efficiency is a big, big deal. He scored more points per 36 minutes, 6 more points per game. He hit more threes. He grabbed the same rebounds but almost doubled his assists. His steals went down a little bit, but then he shot, instead of 43.5%, he shot 44.5%. Instead of 69% from the line, that's the big surprise. He went from 68 and 69 in his first two seasons from the line to 82%, and took his three-point percentage up to 41, up from 40. So these are big, big jumps from McCollum in per 36 in numbers. He averaged 21 points a game, 2.5 threes, 3.5 rebounds, 4 assists, 1.2 steals, and the aforementioned percentages. Big, big numbers for CJ. He was the 44th ranked player in 9 cat leagues, 31st ranked player in 8 cat leagues. Really a tremendous season. Is he a top 50 player moving forward? I would have to say yes. But how does he get better from here? Under what situation does CJ McCollum average more than 21 points a game? Can he be a 25 points, 3 triples like Dame Lillard? He's not that player. He's not that same guy. Can he average more than 4.5 to 5 assists? I would almost assuredly say not. So 21, 3, 4, 2.5 threes, 1.2 steals. How does he get better? 45 and 82. How does he get better? Where does he get better? Is he playing more than 35 minutes a game? Probably not either. And his numbers were great. You can't complain. 39th ranked player in 8 cat leagues, tremendous. That's inside the first three or four rounds. Really, really surprising stuff. But how much better does he get? Has he got a chance to be a top 20 player? I would be shocked if he was. I wouldn't be stunned if this is the best season that he ever puts up fantasy rankings wise. Not necessarily efficiency wise or per minute wise or anything like that. Just total overall volume. Is this his best season? He might have another season. He might be ranked 42nd next season. He might be ranked 45th. He might continue to be around that. But I think to think that if him going and taking another big step forward, it's tough to do. How does he get better than 21, 3, and 4? Like, as an off guard, he's not averaging 6 assists, and he's never been a guy who got assists at all in any time throughout his career. He just hasn't been that guy. Defensively, he got 1.2 steals a game. That's fine, but he's, like I said with Dame, he's a poor defender. He had a negative 2 box score plus minus. In fact, he was fourth on his team in win shares. Still a really impressive number at 6, but behind Ed Davis, behind Mason Plumlee. And so, yes, he was good and he was quite flashy, but overall, maybe his numbers weren't quite there. His win shares per 48 were just barely above a league average number of 0.104. Yeah, Vorp was solid, a 17.7 PER. Just all these numbers that the advanced stats don't make you wow at him. Yeah, 2.5 box score plus minus for a total of 0.4. Like, these are not wow advanced numbers. They're wow counting stats, but I just think that he might lose a minute or two when the Blazers get a bit stronger. And I don't see how he goes forward. He might very easily stay the same and stay at that same level. But for him to... Look, I could be wrong. If you think I'm wrong, tweet at me and tell me, how does he get better? Where does he get better? What does he do differently? Have you got top 20 faith in him? If I own CJ McCollum in a dynasty league and someone is trading me legit top 20 value for him, I'm doing it. But if you wouldn't, tell me why. I want to know what I'm interested in, because look, I got him wrong. Maybe it's just a case of me being going, no, you know what? I had it wrong last season. I didn't think he'd be this good, and I'm being stubborn. I don't think that's what I'm doing, but maybe it is. Maybe subconsciously I'm going, there's no way he can do it again. There's no way he can get better again. I said the same thing about Jimmy Butler last year, and you know, a lot of people were thinking, yeah, Jimmy's going to be a top 10 player, and I was like, how is he possibly going to get better? That was my query, and he didn't get better. He ended up being worse in terms of overall ranking, not by much, but it is hard to take that bigger step and then, you know, back it up and do it again. Draymond did it. He took a step forward and then took a huge leap forward again, but it's not easy to do. How does he realistically get better? And that's the sort of decision that you need to make yourself. You should be looking at and going, what does he do it? Does he shoot more than 45% as a shooting guard? Probably not. Does he shoot more than 40% from three? Like, Jesus, no, probably not. Where does it come from? I think I've stressed that point enough. Mason Plumlee. Let's think back to Mason Plumlee last season. Lionel Hollins, rightfully fired in Brooklyn. He thought it was the best idea that he start Mason Plumlee over Brook Lopez for big chunks of the season. He also decided that Jarrett Jack would be better than Darren Williams. And that's when I lost complete faith in Lionel Hollins last season. This guy is a dick. He can't coach. To be starting Brook Lopez, or to putting Brook Lopez on the bench behind Mason Plumlee and Williams behind Jack is an abomination to coaching. And it really stifled what Lopez and Williams were able to do in that season. Now, Plumlee came across in a trade in exchange for Rondae Hollis-Jefferson from the Nets. And I was really keen on him in the preseason. I thought, you know what, he's a guy that in that back half of the draft, if you're punting free throws, he can be a useful player. He did put up a 1.6 on-off number, so positive. 130 in 9 cat leagues, 110 in 8 cat leagues, really solid. But he wasn't used well enough. He only played 25 minutes a game. You know, if he played 30 minutes a game, he's easily a top 80 player, I think. He averaged 9 points, but 7.7 rebounds, almost 3 assists, a block and 0.8 steals on 52%, and actually got his free throws to 64, so took himself out of that punt territory. Still a poor number, but took himself out of the absolute have to punt section. But we saw in the playoffs, he was like Joakim Noah out there. He wasn't scoring, but he was grabbing stacks of rebounds, he was getting tons of assists, and his passing was a real treat this season. In the 25 minutes a game, he plays 30 and he averages 12 and 9. And gets 3.5 assists and gets a steal and a block a game, that's easily top 80 numbers. But for some reason, you know, Terry Stotts, who was great, didn't find the need to play Mason Plumlee that much. And that's not something that I'm massively keen on. Now, I think that Plumlee's a decent center. He's not great. He's not perfect. But he can be something, especially in that the ability for him to pass and get steals as a big man, which can be a key factor. But rim protection's not his greatest forte. Scoring is obviously not his greatest forte, but he doesn't really need to score when the scoring, 50 points a game basically, is coming from Lillard and McCollum. So I do think he fits, but looking for an upgrade at center is not going to be a terrible decision for Portland. But as a backup center, which is probably what his role is going to be on a good team, I think that Myers Leonard is pretty solid. Not Myers Leonard, Mason Plumlee is pretty solid in that respect. He did finish third on this team in win shares at 6.1. He finished third in win shares per 48. He had the best defensive box score plus minus on this team at a 3. He finished third on this team in box score plus minus in total, second in VORP. Really solid 17.2 PER, played all 82 games, good true shooting percentage. Really hard to knock much that Mason Plumlee did. But will he ever be a top 70 player? I don't think that's ever going to be the case. Will he ever be better than the 110 that he was this year? Well, there's a chance he gets the top 100, but I think that he is a candidate to slip depending on how the Blazers act in free agency. And I think their biggest targets are going to be centers, whether that's going to be someone like Dwight Howard, whether that's going to be someone like Hassan Whiteside. They're the sort of players that I think they should be targeting. And that's going to put Plumlee into a backup role, which I think is absolutely fine. Or they might even use him as trade bait to get another wing or get something else that they're looking for. But he was fine, he was serviceable, and that's what he's going to be. But he's never going to be a star. He's never going to be a player who plays 30 minutes or so on a good team. And this wasn't a good team. This wasn't a great team, sorry. And I think he still should have got 30 minutes because they were lacking some big men. Chris Kaman shouldn't have been playing. I would have loved to have seen Plumlee get those minutes, but it wasn't to be. Al-Farouq Aminu signed the first contract of free agency last year, and people scoffed. They scoffed, they did. Al-Farouq Aminu, 4 years, $32 million. The Portland Trailblazers have lost their shit. Al-Farouq Aminu, $32 million. Al-Farouq Aminu now has 3 years left at $21 million. 3 years at $21 million. He is the biggest, but one of the biggest bargains in the NBA. Marcus Morris, one of them, probably the biggest bargain. Al-Farouq Aminu, 3 years at 21, ludicrous. He is a guy that got ridiculously hot in the playoffs, started bombing threes from everywhere. That's not his game, and he has done it in bunches, and he's a very big bunch player. A player who'll go out and grab 20 boards. He'll go out and have 5 blocks. He'll get 5 steals. He'll hit 6 threes. And then he won't do it for 5 weeks, and you'll have like four rebounds a game. But then he goes out and just has an absolute monster of a game. I do really like Aminu. I do think that he is a really handy player. He was 110th in 9 cat leagues. He had a positive 1.8 in on-off numbers. He was 113th in 8 cat. So in 12 team leagues, you should have owned him. He wasn't a must-own guy necessarily all season, but for big stretches, he was. He played 29 minutes a game for the year. He was just solid. 10 points, 1.5 threes, 6 rebounds, 0.9 steals, 0.6 blocks, 42-74. But there's a lot of scope for him to improve. He can easily be a player who is a triple one. Now, 0.6 blocks for him is not a good number. He's a guy that can block shots in a bigger amount than that. He did average 0.8 blocks a game last season in only 19 minutes. So I thought he'd come in and be a guy that averaged over a steal and a block a game. But the way that Portland plays defense, they don't get block shots. They don't get steals as much as what other teams do. And that contributes to somewhat what Lillard does as well. They just don't get those sort of stats to the same degree that other teams do due to the nature of Terry Stotts' defense. But Aminu has got scope to improve those numbers, to get those defensive stats back up past one a game. 6.4 rebounds from a small forward eligible player is pretty impressive. But 42% from the field, 37% from three, which is a big jump. This is the other thing we look at. He shot 37% from three. His previous four seasons, 28, 22, 27, 27. That's a 10% jump in three-point percentage. Is that realistic? I don't feel overly confident in it, but I don't feel terribly unconfident, if that's a better way of putting it. I think that he could easily be a guy that approaches 1.8 threes a game and gets a steal and gets a block and gets a triple one value. I think that he's a top 100 threat for at least the next 2 to 3 seasons, and he's really underrated. Now, whether the playoff success that he had translates into next season remains to be seen. But we saw CJ McCollum took a really good playoff from the Blazers, turned it into a tremendous season. Now, I don't think Aminu's got the ability to go that hard, but he could easily find himself lodged firmly in the top 100 next season, and I wouldn't be surprised. All he needs to do, really, is to get that ranking up, is to get his field goal percentage up to 45. from 41 to 45. Yes, it's a jump, but he took a 10% jump in his three-point percentage. He's got to start finishing around the rim a bit better, start finishing his two-point shots a little bit better, and it is possible, and get those defensive numbers back. And these are all things that we've seen from him in the past. If he averaged 8 boards a game, wouldn't be shocked as well. So there is scope for Aminu to get better. He's not old. He is a talented player. He's only 25 years of age, so he's the same age as Dame Lillard. And I don't think many people would really think that that's the case. You would, if you had to poll people, you'd think Aminu's 28, Lillard's 23. That's just the way that it appears. In fact, they're both 25, so that's a little bit of a weird oddity in the way that this team is sort of built and structured. Ed Davis. Really, really good. Actually, you know what? Before I get to Ed Davis, let's talk about Aminu's advanced numbers. He was a 0.2 in box score plus minus, so just marginally above average. He was had a four win share total, which was a sixth on the team. A below average PER, below average true shooting, below average win shares per 48, less than a negative offensive box score plus minus. So all in all, his advanced numbers look okay, but you really need to dive a little bit deeper into it, and you need to look at some of his performances in the playoffs and the areas that he's got to improve as well, which can easily be done. Ed Davis was tremendous for this team. He was second on the team in win shares. He led the team in win shares per 48. He was second on the team in defensive box score plus minus. He was second on the team in box score plus minus. He was second on the team in PER. He had a true shooting of 62%. He finished in fantasy 129th playing. How many minutes a game did he play? 21. 129th in 9 cat, 161 in 8 cat, so a big drop because of his low percentages. But he's a guy that I've never been able to understand why he doesn't play more. In Toronto, just before he was traded for Rudy Gay, which was a horrible trade, we know that, he was really starting to come on, and he was a comfortable top 100 player. Went to Memphis, lost in Memphis, absolutely. Went to the Lakers, you know, should have played more than what he played in Los Angeles, no doubt. Came to Portland on a pretty cheap deal, and you probably should have played more than the 21 minutes. Now, I said Plumlee should have played more. I said Davis should have played more. They both can't play more. But there are guys that didn't necessarily need to play. Noel Vonleh didn't need 15 minutes in 78 games. He was crap. And I don't believe that he'll ever become good. He's still 20, so there's a lot of room for him to improve. But I would have been giving Davis more run out there and getting, because he is an impact player. And I thought he had a really impressive season. In his 21 minutes, he averaged 6.5 points. That's not much, but 7.5 rebounds, 0.7 steals, 0.9 blocks on 61%. They're all numbers that can be used in fantasy, and they're all really positive contributions in those categories. And to get it from a guy at 21 minutes a game is very interesting. And in a 14 team league, you'd love that. And in a 12 team league, he would have been on and off rosters all season. But the ability to get a low end double double, to block shots, to get rebounds, and really influence your field goal percentage category, it's huge for Davis. And if you care about turnovers, he doesn't get them at all. Another player who doesn't get them is Alan Crabb. Now, his on-off numbers looked poor for the season. He was a negative 1.9, which is not a good sign, but he did have to play with some pretty poor bench players at times. Fantasy-wise, his game doesn't necessarily translate. He was 146th this season. He had a big drop-off post-All-Star to 192. In 8-cat, he was 172 and went down to 222 post-All-Star. He ended up playing 81 games at 26 minutes a pop after coming in off a severe ankle injury through preseason, but that's, you know, their career-high numbers, 26 minutes. He averaged 10 points a game, 1.5 threes. But the problem is he doesn't do anything else. He got 2.7 rebounds, that's yuck. 1.2 assists, terrible. 0.8 steals, not bad. 0.2 blocks, nothing. 46 from the field, 87% from the line, yeah, that's great, but you're doing it on one attempt a game, 1.5 attempts a game, not influential at all. 39% from three, absolutely tremendous, and that's where his value came from. But what does Alan Crabb do from a fantasy point of view? Where can he get better? He played double the amount of minutes this season, so he was in that CJ McCollum sort of boat where he increased role by a huge amount, but also increased his efficiency, especially in the scoring, and took his field goal percentage up by 6%, took his free throw percentage up by 10, and took his three-point percentage up by 5. So big jumps in his efficiency as he headed into his fourth season in the league. They'll be looking to bring Alan Crabb back because he is a player who fits that wing 3-and-D sort of role to this team for a T. He's not an awesome defender, but he's better defender than CJ McCollum. He's a better defender than what Dame Lillard is, and he's got a bit of scope to improve there. Overall, though, he was a negative in box score plus minus. His win shares weren't overly impressive. A below average PER, a pretty good true shooting at 57. So something to hang your hat on there. His on-offs weren't good. But for fantasy, do I ever see Alan Crabb becoming a top 100 player? I don't think I do, because he's a bit Doug McDermott-y in that he'll score, he'll hit threes at a good percentage, he'll hit free throws, and he'll do nothing else. And that's a concern in fantasy, that it more structures him to a 16 to 14 team league range and a streamer because I need three-pointers sort of player. That's where he sits to me. I just don't really see him all of a sudden becoming this aggressive board grabber or shot blocker or stealer or passer. None of those things. Yes, 40% three-point shooter is coveted by all teams, and he's going to get a pretty nice contract. And I'll answer the question now. Someone asked the question on Facebook. I better bring up their name. Scott Green says, how much do we pay Alan Crabb? I think that he gets, he would have to get close to $10 million a year. If he got a three-year, $30 million deal, that's not crazy. And he probably gets more than that, to be honest, just for being able to hit 40% of his threes, play 26 to 28 minutes a night, play some good defense, and have the ability to grow into his role a bit. I think that if you paid him $12 million a year, you wouldn't feel totally aggrieved at that. I don't think it's a terrible decision. But again, it's so hard to predict what's happening in this offseason. Alan Crabb, from a fantasy point of view, I don't really think he ever becomes an elite prospect. I don't think he ever becomes a top 75 player, and I think you'd struggle to ever become a top 100 player. But I've been wrong on players before, and I just don't see it really with Crabb. The next player, Myers Leonard, came in with pretty high hopes for Myers, and on off he was good. He was a two, so team was 2 points per 100 possessions better with him on the court versus when he was off. But that didn't translate well to fantasy rankings. 210th for the season in 9 cat and 211th in 8 cat leagues. He didn't play a huge amount of games with that shoulder problem. Still played 61, but that's not a full season's worth. But only got 22 minutes. He did lose his starting job early in the season to Noah Vonleh. Just crazy that they kept running Vonleh out there, who honestly was dreadful. 8.4 points a game, 1.4 triples, 5 rebounds, 0.1 steals, 0.3 blocks, 45 at 76 and 38%. Now, his percentages suffered a lot with his shoulder injury, but he still came back and shot 38% as a center, 45% and 76. We know that he was a 50-40-90 guy last season. That can obviously return. Now, whether they re-sign him, we don't know that at this point. I think that as a 4, he's not a great option. He best fits as a 5 in this league, as a stretch 5, and a real matchup nightmare on offense. Depending on who he's got around him, I would have loved to have seen him playing as a 5 and Ed Davis playing as a 4 next to him. Not that Davis is a great as a 4, but it would have been an interesting combination to see a little bit more often. But Leonard as a 4 does really struggle. Now, whether another team gets him and thinks, we're going to pay him $15 million, which is completely realistic to me, and have him as a starting center that plays 29 minutes a game, then he is absolutely going to be a player who you'd consider with your last or second last pick. Would I draft him in the top 100? I probably wouldn't at this early point, but those percentages will rebound. They will get better. And he can block 0.7, 0.8 shots a game. He can score 15 points. He can get 7 rebounds and he could hit 2 threes a game, realistically. He played 22 minutes a game with a busted shoulder and hit 1.5 at 38%. And that's a decrease in his shooting. That could actually go up. So I do think there is potential for Leonard. This is the best time to buy him in Dynasty if someone is not enamored. And they probably shouldn't be after seeing a ranking outside the top 200. But this is where you buy. And this is where you get a guy that you can feel might be a top 90 player next season or the year after. He's definitely got that sort of upside. So this is a pretty good time to try and buy on Myers Leonard. Advanced numbers, he was okay in that regard. He finished 8th on the team in win shares, a pretty poor win shares per 48, to be honest. Box score plus minus, he was a negative on offense and negative on defense. The defense is always going to be the concern for him, and the offense will get better, but still 56% true shooting is decent, and we know he can get better. The injuries did really ravage his season. Hurt the first part of the season, hurt the second part of the season, or the end of the season, and sandwiched in the middle was recovery time. So not the best time for Myers Leonard, but this is the time that you buy low on players like that who have an injury-ravaged season when they had that opportunity. And maybe he never bounces back, but I think that there's a better than 50% chance that he does. Mo Harkless. Really, really like my Harkless and have liked him for a couple of seasons. One of the biggest mysteries to me of last season was why the Orlando Magic did not play Mo Harkless or Kylo Quinn. I think both guys are tremendous players who have got starter potential, and the Magic just said, you know what, no, we're too good. Let's not play these guys. Let's play absolute dickheads like Willie Green instead. And that's what they did. Harkless was... The Blazers got him for nothing. They got him for like a pick 58 in an upcoming draft or something like that. Some second round pick that's top 55 protected, which won't even be conveyed. They got him for nothing. Now they have to make the decision whether they pay him as a restricted free agent. But I think that what Harkless did in the playoffs and at the end of the season, that is who Harkless is. He is a three who can play stretch four. He can rebound. He can play great defense. He gets his hands on a lot of balls. Giggity. But can he shoot? That's the concern with Harkless. Can he shoot? And pairing him with Aminu is tough, because you wouldn't say that Aminu's a great shooter, though he did have a bit of a breakout this season. But Harkless shot 28% from three. That's tough to do as a wing. He only played 19 minutes at 6.5 points, but half a three, 3.5 rebounds, 0.6 steals, 47 and 62%. The shooting is the concern with Mo Harkless. He was ranked 251st this season, 252nd in 8 cat leagues, jumped up post All-Star to 162, and I think that's probably where he sits as a fringe 12-teamer and a 14-team guy. Now, where does he fit on this team moving forward? I think that they will definitely want to try and bring him back, but he fits behind Al-Farouq Aminu, clearly, and to me, he's a player who's very similar to Aminu. And it really depends on what they do in that front court. But maybe do they play Aminu full-time at the four and play Harkless at the three and then have McCollum at the two and Lillard at the one? That's a possibility, but I don't know if they can run Aminu full-time at the four. Maybe they can. I'm not sure that they can do that and have that combination of Aminu and Harkless at the three and four of guys who take threes but don't always hit them. I think he probably suits better a 22 to 24 minute bench role as a backup three, backup four sort of player who can go and guard twos as well and potentially guard ones also. I do think that he does have a role in this league. Whether that's a role that translates to fantasy or not remains to be seen, but he is a plus defender. He's a guy who can do a few things and can be a real hard, aggressive player, and that's very key as well. But he's going to need a change in his shooting. He's going to need to get that shooting up. He's going to need to hit more free throws. He's going to need to hit more threes. And there's a possibility that it happens. We saw plenty of players on this team alone who jumped 5, 6, 7% in their three-point shooting. If he becomes a 35% three-point shooter, then he's worthy of 27 minutes a night. At this point, though, it's hard to see him getting it, but I do really like Mo Harkless. I'm just not sure his game ever completely translates to fantasy and whether he becomes ever a top 70 player. I would put my money on no. Gerald Henderson's far from my favorite player in the league. He had an on-off at 0.2, so just about average, 269 in 9 cat and 256 in 8 cat. He came across in that Nick Batum trade along with Noah Vonleh. As I mentioned, Henderson played 72 games, 20 minutes a pop, 8.7 points. He hit 0.7 threes, 3 rebounds. He gets half a steal, 0.3 blocks, 44 and 77. Thoroughly below average right across the board. Not a positive contribution in any one statistical category for Gerald Henderson. He's 28 years old. He's an unrestricted free agent. I don't really see why the Blazers would be tripping over themselves to re-sign him. Yes, he does some things. He doesn't stretch the floor, though. I wouldn't exactly call him an awesome defender. I also wouldn't call him a dreadful defender, but he's definitely not awesome. He's not... You know what he is? He provides a lot of highlights. He's a good dunker. That's about where my affection for Gerald Henderson ends. Your below average win share numbers, negative offensive, negative defensive box score plus minus, a negative VORP, a 12.9 PER, nothing that really makes you look at him and go, I think that Gerald Henderson's going to get better. If you're in a 30-team league like the Red Rock League, he should be drafted, because he will be a player who comfortably sits around that 250 mark and does it for the next two seasons probably. But then he'll be 30, and then he'll drop off, and I don't know what he offers after that once his athleticism goes. Can't shoot, can't defend, can't really create. What does he do after some of that explosion that he's got goes? My answer is probably not much. Noah Vonleh. Noah Vonleh posted, out of the players who played regular minutes are in the rotation on this team, this is not including Brian Roberts, Chris Kamen, Cliff Alexander, Pat Connaughton, and Luis Montero, who barely played. Noah Vonleh posted by far the worst on-off numbers. Only two players had negative on-off numbers on this team. One was Alan Crabb at negative 1.9, and then Vonleh at negative 4.1. And you might say, yeah, Josh, you know, he's young, he's bad. Yep, I know. I know he's bad. He played 15 minutes a game. But he also started nearly every one of those games. So he played with the best players and still was a negative 4.1. He's really, really, really been bad his first two seasons. He was ranked 344th this season. That's up from 384th last season. But he was gifted starts, much like the PJ Hairston mold of just, look at you, you started games. Congratulations. Good on you. Why? Why is he starting games? He started 56 games. He had a PR of 8.6. He was an offensive negative 4, offensive box score plus minus. Negative, defensively, he was dead even, and that's probably a win for him. And showing some defensive chops is something that he's going to have to, you know, hold on to, because offensively he looks lost. 47% true shooting is absolutely dreadful. Dreadful as a power forward. He had 3.6 points. He was 3.9 rebounds. He had 0.3 steals and 0.3 blocks in 15 minutes, which isn't bad. 42%, 75%, and 23% from three. And he took 0.6 attempts per game in his 15 minutes. He has got a long way to go. But as I've said on plenty of the other podcasts, if you're a young player, and he was super young last season, he's still 20. If you are a plus defender or a break-even defender at that age, you've got somewhere to go. Now, he's got a long way to go offensively, a long way. He's probably 4 years away from being a contributor to me. And whether he even gets himself a second contract, given how poorly he's played, is up for debate. But he does have potential. You won't have to spend anything to get Novon Lee in Dynasty. And it really depends on what you're giving up, whether I like the deal or not. But he's not a complete write-off just yet. I don't like him. I don't think he's good. But there's a non-zero chance that he turns it around. And I'm very interested to see if he does, because I think his game could be really fantasy-friendly if he was able to turn it around. If he was able to hit 47% of his shots and get 35% of his triples, and then block a shot a game, and then hit a three a game, and get 7-8 rebounds a game. He can do all that, theoretically. In theory, he's a good player. In practice, we've yet to see it. But it is something that could happen. The next group of players, they barely played, so I'm not really sure what to talk about with these guys. Brian Roberts and Chris Kaman are both unrestricted free agents. Yeah, Roberts showed flashes over his time in Charlotte and New Orleans. He barely played in Portland. If we look at the minutes that these guys played for the season, Brian Roberts played 137 minutes with Portland. Cliff Alexander played 36 minutes, 112 for Kaman, 143 for Connaughton, 42 for Luis Montero. Yeah, nothing really all that interesting for me. I think if you're looking for any of these guys in Dynasty, Kaman's not going to be around. Roberts is cooked. Luis Montero showed nothing. Pat Connaughton is intriguing, but as a second-round draft choice, I'm not really sure how we can look at him and be excited. But he did have a negative 7.4 on off, which seems terrible, but Roberts was negative 14, Kaman negative 14.5, Alexander negative 14.7, and Montero negative 56.2. So really the best of that really piss-poor bunch. He was the 458th ranked player on the season, Pat Connaughton was. He averaged 1.1 points in his 4.2 minutes a game. He shot 27% from the field and 24% from three. These are obviously horrific numbers. They will get better. He will have a better season. And will he be a player that's drafted in the Red Rock 30-team league? I think he should be. Because I think that he can have he'll play more than 4 minutes a game. He might play 12 minutes a game. And that might be useful. But I'm not massively super excited about what Pat Connaughton can do from a dynasty perspective moving forward. I don't think I might bring up his player comps as we speak and to see if anything really stands out. Look, his best, no one really compares anything good to what this sort of season that he had, and that's fair enough because he didn't play many minutes. So maybe there's no point even looking at his player comps. Connaughton, I don't think there's much real hope in him ever becoming a top 200 player. And that's not saying, it's not exuding a huge amount of confidence, obviously, in him. All right, I'm going to take a quick break now. Then I'm going to be back to talk about one of the stashed players that the Blazers have got, and then answer your questions about the team from Portland. I saw your picture today, got me thinking about the things that I would say, but I know you're happy now and you're someplace far away, 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 and I can't remember the way you taste, you taste, you taste. I walk down your old street and I wonder if we'll ever meet again. rest of the Portland Trailblazers now in this podcast. Again, remember, if you haven't received your email yet for the Red Rock 30-team Dynasty League, there are a few spots left, so you might get an email in the next couple of days. Not everyone can get in, unfortunately, but the lucky few who do, I hope you are ready to bring it in what looks to be a pretty exciting league. Daniel Diaz is a player that the Blazers drafted in the second round last season. He's been playing in Spain for the last couple of seasons. He moved from a team called Gipuzkoa Basket, which is where he played when he got drafted, where he played 30 minutes a night and had 12 points, 7 rebounds, a steal a game. He moved to Unicaja. He played only 16 minutes a game there, averaged just 5 points. He shot 39% from the field. He shot 32% from three. He only got 3.5 rebounds, 0.4 steals. If you don't know who Daniel Diaz is, he's a wing player that plays, he's a small forward. He's a 6'7 player. He didn't do anything really spectacular that makes you think that the Blazers are going to be in a massive rush to bring him over. As a wing who struggles shooting the European three, that doesn't look great for his prospects in the NBA. Not a super free throw shooter. He had a career high 74% this season, which isn't saying much. He's only cracked double digits in scoring once in his career, and that was the season where he got drafted at 12.1. If you're banking your hopes on Daniel Diaz being your stash player that comes across and blows up, I reckon you're going to have a bad time. Let's talk questions. Dean Vasic says, would Hassan Whiteside be a perfect fit for this team? A great culture with a very good coach. Really hard to tell with Whiteside because he's in a situation with a great culture and a very good coach, and he's done really well. But will the change from Miami to Portland agree with him? I think that basketball-wise, I think he'd fit superbly. The best shot blocker in the game. A guy whose defense has been somewhat derided, but I think he's going to provide a better defensive presence than Mason Plumlee is, or Myers Leonard is, and a better rim protector than both of those guys combined. So yes, he would be a perfect guy. Catching lobs from Lillard and McCollum creates a little bit of extra spacing, vertical spacing more than horizontal spacing, which means his ability to go up and catch the ball. And defensively, really helps to insulate the issues that those guys have on the perimeter, McCollum and Lillard, who are below average defenders easily. And he can erase a lot of those mistakes. Back him up with Ed Davis, have Plumlee there or trade one of those guys, have Leonard out there to stretch the floor a little bit. I think it's a really great situation, Dean, and I think it would be awesome. Dwight Howard's the other guy who could come out there as well and fill a similar role in a team again, who is really should be looking to contend in the next 3 years or so. And Howard's still probably got 2 or 3 years, decent years left in him. Wouldn't hate that move. Beben Badass. And Beben, you are in the Red Rock 30-team league, so congratulations. He says, in a dynasty league, how relevant are Mo Harkless and Myers Leonard? I think that Leonard has got way more upside than Harkless, and he's a guy that, as I mentioned before, I would be looking at trying to acquire at this low point in his career. I do really like Harkless, but I just don't think he tops out as a high ceiling as what Leonard is. Now, whether Leonard ever gets there, we don't know, but Leonard, to me, is a player who can easily jump into the top 100. Harkless is probably a top 120 guy at best, maybe top 110. And I think you can get Leonard probably cheaper at this point. VP says, what front court power forward or center player can the Blazers get to become a serious contender? They've got to target a big. They've got to target Whiteside. They might not get him, but that's who they have to go after. They can definitely go after maybe Festus Ezeli as another guy. Maybe they bring in Bismack Biyombo, which I don't love, but I don't hate it either. Whiteside's the guy they want. Biyombo, Ezeli, Howard. They need a rim protector. They need a center as a defensive presence to take some of the pressure off Lillard and McCollum and allow them not to have to get burnt as much defensively. And someone who can catch some lobs from him. I think that any of those guys would be pretty decent guys to have a look at. Dennis Hickson, who lives apparently 23 blocks and a bridge away from the Rose Garden. So Dennis, he says, what's CJ's draft value next year? He's going to go in the top 50. If you take him in the top 30, I don't reckon you're going to be right, but I can understand it. I think that he is a fourth round player next season. And as I said earlier, I can't see how the improvement happens. Do you expect Aminu to improve? Yes, I do. Is Myers Leonard, if Myers Leonard is around, is he top 100 draftable? No, I wouldn't be taking him in the top 100. Absolutely, I think there's a massive chance that he ends up in the top 100, but I would not be taking him there. Beben Badass is back for a second question. He says, which players could the Blazers acquire in free agency? They need a guy, a backcourt player, I think, to He's sort of handled the ball secondarily. I reckon Dellavedova would fit beautifully with his team as a defensive hustle guy, which is what McCollum and Lillard aren't. I would really like to see him on this team, and I mentioned the big men as well. Rob Percher has a great question here. Now, Rob is also in the 30-team Dynasty League. He says, Aminu and Plumlee put up better statistical numbers in the postseason than in the regular season. Which is more likely to be the case for next year? I would say Aminu would be my guess out of those two. Ryan O'Neill. Mo Harkless, a lot of Mo Harkless questions. Is starting to evolve into a solid fantasy asset. How high is his ceiling? Is he better at the 3 or 4? I think he's better at the 3 defensively. Offensively, probably better at the 4. Yes, he is starting to evolve, but I really do doubt he becomes a top 100 guy. Joseph Diffenbach, will CJ McCollum be this good moving forward, or was that a career year? I've given my thoughts on that. Again, feel free to disagree with me. I think it there's a massive chance that it is a career year, or it's in that realm of this is his best 2-year stretch of his career. Nathan Ritchie, how good is Myers Leonard really? I think he can be pretty good. There was a lot of sleeper hype around him at the beginning of the year, largely due to his percentages. Should we expect a jump in production from him, or do we know what he is now? Nah, I've talked about Leonard. I think I would have already answered your question there, Nathan. I think he can be much better than what he was this season. I wouldn't be looking at spending a top 100 pick on him under any circumstance, but that is clearly, I think, where he can get in the next 2 seasons, and I wouldn't be writing him off just yet. Scott Green, I answered your question already, but I'll ask it again. How much do we pay Alan Crabb? 10 or 12 million a year. I think he is absolutely fine for a guy who hits threes and can play some defense on the wing there. We're done. This podcast is over. We'll be back with another In the Season in Review podcasts. Absolutely no idea what team it is, but you'll see me tweet it out when it's done. To make sure you never miss an episode of this show, please subscribe on YouTube or on iTunes or Stitcher or Overcast or TuneIn or anywhere where you get podcasts, and leave a review on iTunes. It is tremendously helpful. Make sure you're doing that. Check out Fantrax as well. Just go browse the site. Talk to your league mates. Hey, I've got a great new place where we can host our league. Piss off these spreadsheets. Piss off notebooks. Do it all on Fantrax. It's all kept there. So many options. Convert your league into a dynasty. Convert your league into a keeper league. Make it fun. Have the draft at any time during the year. Slow drafts, all this stuff. It is great. Check out Fantrax. Check out the forums on Fantrax. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.